Alcoholics Anonymous has been around for a long time and has helped countless men and women recover from alcohol addiction. How it all started and a close-up look at the two founders is the subject of a play titled Pass It On, An Evening with Bill W. and Dr. Bob. It's being presented at Logan University's Purser Hall next Saturday at 7 o'clock. The event is being sponsored by NCADA, the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, St. Louis area, and Harris House, the local treatment and recovery center. Joining us to talk about it, Dan Duncan, the Associate Executive Director for the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse for St. Louis. Wes Tobin is the Program Director for Harris House. And Gary Kimball is performing in the play. He is also a member of AA, and he joins us by phone. Are you there, Gary?
Yes. Hello, Don.
Hi.
Thank you for having program.
Well, thanks you for being with us long distance. We'll get to you in just a moment, but I'm going to start with our old friend Dan Duncan. Dan, and ask you why this is an important story to be told in this play.
Well, I think it's important because of the relevance it's had in so many people's lives over so many decades, Don. You know, 1935 is when AA first started, and the effect of AA and has been phenomenal worldwide. It's the granddaddy of self-help programs, and many things have spun off at other 12-step groups for other issues and addictions. And so there's a good deal of our listening audience today that will have some type of direct or indirect connection to AA.
And Wes, how about you and your organization? Its relevance to you?
Harris House has been around 53 years, and it was started by a couple 53 years ago who brought in alcoholics to shelter and help, and they used Alcoholics Anonymous to help them achieve sobriety and regain their lives.
We want to talk a little bit about the play so we can get Gary into this conversation. Again, Dan, I'll just bounce back to you. Tell us a little bit about it, how this came about.
Well, how it came about is our parent organization, Don, the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence out of New York, several months ago, if not maybe a year ago, told us that this play was now going to go on the road. And I'd heard of it. We were familiar with it, and I was intrigued by it. I wanted to see it myself. And once we found out that this was the case, we were interested enough to contact Gary and say what would be involved in bringing it to St. Louis, because we don't get to do enough, the National Council here in St. Louis, to do something for the recovering community. And that's what this is. This is not a fundraiser. It's a break-even event. And it's really NCADA and Harris House are doing this kind of as a gift to people in recovery or those people that are interested in recovery.
Wes, who would you expect the audience to be?
I'm sorry, what was that question?
Who would you expect the audience to be?
I would expect the audience to be recovering people, members of Alcoholics Anonymous, family members, people interested in Alcoholics Anonymous. We hope to have a great turnout. I know at Harris House, if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, we probably wouldn't have been around for 53 years with all their support. So we're looking for an exciting night.
Gary Kimball, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
We find that is definitely who our audience is. Every city that we travel to are people in the recovery community, and they bring their friends and family. And it's a great celebration of sobriety. And also, very often, we receive letters from people who need to be in recovery and somehow find their way to the play and end up going to their first 12-step meeting a couple days after seeing the show, which is it's a thrill to know that our work could help people in that way and impact so directly.
What specifically about the play is it, Gary, that would inspire someone to seek help?
Well, it's not so much the play itself, in my opinion. What is powerful is the story of Bill W. and Dr. Bob. The source material is directly from recovery literature, and part of the healing medicine of 12-step recovery are words and things that you read and actions that you take. And it's a story of not just of Bill and Bob historically, what happened from day to day in their lives, but it's a story of who is an alcoholic, what is an alcoholic, and how do you get well. And it's not a dry piece of sandpaper. It's actually, a lot of it's really quite hilarious, and it's very inspiring and touching. But I think the message in it, which is certainly not something that we created, we inserted the message that already existed, the message of 12-step recovery, into the play, and that's what's powerful about it.
Dan, they had a tough time getting this started, I understand. Did they not?
Yeah, the early days when they were first starting out, they made a decision not to take outside help, although there was, I believe, a one-time gift from John D. Rockefeller, but they decided after that that was it. And so they struggled at the very beginning, but after a while, you know, if you think about it, prior to AA, there was not much for alcoholics. There were various attempts at different types of treatment, none of which were very successful. And when AA came along, because there was success involved with people that went to AA, the word got out. And so it started to trickle out and it started to spread, you know, throughout this country and then beyond. So their early struggles were more than made up for the fact that it became successful as a spreading entity.
Gary, you've been...
Common treatment before AA came along was straitjacket, cold tomatoes, nightshade, which is nearly deadly. Those are the kind of treatments they had.
Asylum.
Yeah, exactly. Asylum, that's all they really could do was lock them up.
Gary, I understand that you are a member of AA. I guess that this...
Well, I actually don't... I don't identify as that ever in the press. I am a person in recovery. There are certain traditions in all of the 12-step fellowships that we maintain our anonymity at the level of press. And so you'll never hear me say that I'm a member of AA in public in the press. I will tell you that I'm in recovery. And but we're careful not to identify ourselves as members of a specific 12-step organization.
Well, some of the material that preceded this program indicated that. That's why I brought it up.
Okay. No problem.
I understand. And that's, I guess that's part of the reason for the title of the play, where we don't use last names, correct?
That's really true, yes.
Mm-hmm. Wes,
I have no shame whatsoever about being in recovery, and that's not the issue. It's without protecting the traditions of 12-step recovery, it probably wouldn't still exist. And but we're all welcome to say that we're in recovery, just at the level of press. And the reason being, if someone in the public eye said that they were going to AA, and then they went out and relapsed, and in a public way, and ended up in the newspaper, killed somebody with a drunken car wreck or something like that, there would be a drunk somewhere who needs to go to AA, and they would read that and say, see, that thing doesn't work. And that could cost them their life.
I understand that, but let me turn to Wes. On the other hand, if you have someone who has been through recovery and is in recovery and distinguishes himself or herself, that is also an important element too, is it not?
Sure it is, because then they're able to go out and help others, and that's what pass it on means. I mean, if you look at this story that Gary's going to present and what we're sponsoring, is it's about two guys who got together in 1935. And started this program to help people whose lives were devastated by alcohol, and they were able to recover from that. And now we have in St. Louis, I bet you we have 700 to 800 meetings a week of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's in every country and every state, and it's helping millions of people recover from alcoholism based on their 12 steps and their 12 traditions.
We should point out, and if I haven't already, this is a two-man show. Gary, you have a colleague you'd be working. And who is that?
His name is Will Stutz, and he's an amazing, powerful actor. He plays Dr. Bob, and he started his career on Broadway in 1968 and has done many Broadway shows and dozens of off-Broadway shows and has been featured at really every major regional theater in the United States. He sort of perfected the art of the one-man show and became really known for that. And he's just a great partner to be on stage with. He's a very dear man, and people, our audiences are falling in love with him. He really embodies the spirit of Dr. Bob.
How long did it run in New York?
Well, this play has not ever run in New York. There's another play. It's called Bill W. and Dr. Bob. And that's opened off-Broadway, I think, in 2007. And that was written by Samuel Shem and Janet Suri. And it's playing currently at the Soho Playhouse. It is not a two-man show. It's a historical drama, very different than Pass It On. They both have elements of the same story because the story of Bill W. and Dr. Bob is the story. And, you know, that story doesn't change. But the format of it, how it's presented, is very different. Theirs is a historic drama. It has eight or ten characters. And our show is a two-man show. And what we have done is we have put a recovery meeting on stage. It's as if you're in, it's 1948, and you're at an AA meeting. And Bill W. and Dr. Bob are the keynote speakers. And they share their personal stories of drinking and recovery. And as they do, certain key events in their lives are dramatized. And through this process, while you're being entertained, you're learning about alcoholism and how to get sober.
You mentioned, Dan mentioned it, and you tried to get into the conversation at that point about John D. Rockefeller. You say that is part of the play.
It is. We talk about that in the show. It's an amazing story. John D. Rockefeller, Bill W. was broke. Dr. Bob was broke. They were desperate for money. They were both about to lose their homes. Dr. Bob's practice had all but crumbled, and they were in pretty bad shape, and they borrowed a lot of money. People think this happened just magically overnight. Even the people who have been in 12-step for many, many years are astonished to hear some of these stories. And so through some strange coincidences, they connected with a man named Willard Richardson, who was Rockefeller's best friend and right-hand man. Turned out that he was a long-lost school chum of Bill's brother-in-law, and he arranged a meeting with the board of the Rockefeller Foundation, and they wanted to give AA lots of money, and they were going to give them a grant of $50,000, which that was 1937. That was an enormous amount of money. And then John D. Rockefeller read the report. That's true. It is. John D. Rockefeller read the committee's report, and after he meditated and prayed on it, he came back to Bill W. and Dr. Bob and said, money will be the downfall of your organization, because it will create power, and when people have lots of money, they get, you know, it changes their personality, it changes them. And he said, I think this would be a very bad thing, because up to now, it's been all about goodwill, one person helping another. It should never be an organization with lots of money, so I'm not going to give you any. And then he ended up giving them $5,000 to just help them personally, and said to stay in touch. And 6 years later, they found out that Rockefeller had detectives following them for 6 years, all the time, to everywhere they went, and their wives, to make sure that this was real. And once he was convinced and saw what was happening, then he got behind it. He bought hundreds of copies of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which had not been selling at all, and they were all desperately still in terrible financial shape, and contacted all of his media partners, and suddenly, overnight, the whole world knew about it, and everything changed.
That's quite a story, and the folks here...
Just amazing, right?
Folks here at the table with me are learning something along with the rest of our listening audience
as
well. Yeah,
I didn't know the end of that story. I just knew the beginning part. And I knew about an article, and maybe that spun out of that, Gary, a Saturday Evening Post article that I think significant, because that was a well-read magazine throughout the country at the time,
They couldn't give the big book away. I mean, really, it was sitting around getting moldy in a warehouse, and nobody wanted them. They tried desperately to sell them. And they even put out advertising trying to sell them to all the doctors in America. And they thought they'd get thousands of orders, and they got 12 orders back. And Dr. Bob always says they were all illegible, written by drunken doctors. And it just wasn't selling until Rockefeller did that. And literally overnight, the following week after it came out in the Saturday Evening Post, they sold 7,000 copies, and it went to the top of the bestseller list.
Great story. Let me turn to Wes Tobin now. Wes, what is the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous' success?
I think it may not be a secret, but I think the success is that one person who understands you trying to help you and understand the power of the disease and what it did to your life and offering hope to that person who's at the end of their rope regarding alcohol, and seeing that a person can recover from this and that they're very accepting and welcoming, and that they're offering a solution that can be able to help that person rebuild their lives.
Dan, how does that work? Not everybody knows the format for these meetings.
Well, to jump on what Wes just said, I think when somebody goes to a meeting for the first time, generally they're going to meet a bunch of people who are in various stages of recovery. They could have a few months, a few weeks, a few years, lots of years. And that combined with what Wes just said, it tells you right away, okay, this is possible. Obviously it's possible. I wouldn't be sitting here with, you know, 20 people who are all in recovery. And then just through active listening and whatnot, they start to realize, okay, there are certain things I have to do. And it involves changes in attitudes and behaviors and whatnot, you know, which is easier said than done. But you do it incrementally. There's a lot of phrases and slogans of staying in today one day at a time. And it really is about, you know, cleaning up your past as best you can and moving on and staying in today. And there's a lot of optimism, a lot of humor. People, I think, are probably surprised when they go to any 12-step meeting and find that there's a lot of laughter. I think they expect very somber, serious conversation. Not that that never happens, but I think the fact that there is humor and that one of the important key things that you learn is not to take yourself too damn seriously, you know, to lighten up and take this as a new chance to start your life anew. And that's what people do. And you know, as we said earlier, this has literally saved millions of people's lives. Sure, some people come, return to drinking or drugging. It does happen, but an awful lot of people go there, stay there, and get well.
Gary,
I'd have... Bob Lindsay, the CEO of the national organization, National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, often speaks in Washington before Congress and so forth. And he said he's been asked hundreds of times, well, this thing doesn't really work, does it? Because everybody doesn't get well. And he said, well, point out any disease that the treatment works for everyone, no matter what it is, you know. But most people do stay well. And it has a lot to do with willingness. It's really fascinating. It's a medical disease with a spiritual solution.
And some people are critical of that. I'm sure we're all familiar with that. But there is a group out there that thinks that it has no place in this format.
I think there's misinterpretations often by people who never had any real involvement.
I think every drunk I know, and I know thousands of drunks in recovery, and I'm one of them, none of us liked that spiritual idea when we first walked into the meeting. The first thing I did, I look at those steps, and I saw the word God, 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 and I thought, oh, geez. I can't do this.
Yeah, Gary, we love having you here. We love having you here, but give Dan a chance to finish what he was saying, please.
All I was going to say is, that's okay, Gary. I think that people hear spirituality, they may think religion, they may not be inclined toward religion, and so they're turned off. But I think most people, when they stick around, they start getting a new interpretation of what spirituality means, you know, and they ask themselves, how am I doing as a person? How's my spirit? How's my relationship with myself and other people? In a sense of higher power, all those things, generally speaking, are going to be not so good.
Is it an issue, Wes, with you?
No, it's not an issue. You know, again, what I see it is, we have a very powerful disease that's destroying lives. And before it destroys a life, it destroys other people who love them's lives and their employment. It has a big impact on society. And this is another solution to try to help people. Never once did Alcoholics Anonymous say we're the answer. What they said is, this is another solution that you can try for this devastating disease, because we haven't found any other thing as successful at this time as Alcoholics Anonymous. And you can use it with therapy, and you can seek other avenues of treatment or solutions, but this could be part of it. And this, at one time, and my thoughts is, one time, this was the only thing we had.
Yep.
Yeah, and others have borrowed from the format.
And others have borrowed from this format.
The time is getting away, and... Go ahead, Gary.
Thank you. It's also amazing and astonishing to learn that there are dozens of other illnesses that use the 12 steps to heal them.
Right.
And from not just addiction, gambling and hoarding and sex addiction, money issues, debting, so many different 12-step programs that use the same exact 12 steps, and most of them use AA's Big Book. And it's a powerful, powerful program.
Obviously it is. I want to take one quick phone call, because time has just about slipped away from us. Jeff is calling from St. Louis, and go ahead, Jeff.
Hi. I wanted to ask about Harris House, but you all mentioned the humor. The couple I want to ask about love to tell this joke that the difference between a drunk and an alcoholic is that the drunk doesn't have to go to the meetings. But the you mentioned a couple that founded it. I knew a couple years ago, Dallas and Eileen. I can mention their last name if it's appropriate. But are they the couple that started Harris House? I knew they had been involved with Harris House.
Yes, sir. They are the couple that started Harris House.
Oh, they were truly saints.
And thank God for Dallas and Eileen, because we've been around for 53 years, and we're presently in South St. Louis with 110 beds. And so 53 years and 110 beds, just think of the thousands of people that if it wasn't for Dallas and Eileen, the Harris House would not have been able to help.
Well, I am tickled to hear of their legacy. They were wonderful, wonderful people.
You have made my day. Thank you for calling.
That's why we wanted to bring Jeff into the conversation, Wes. We had a feeling he was going to be as he was. Only 2 minutes left. I want to go quickly around the group here and just put a bottom line on this. Gary, give me in about 20 seconds your final thought on all of this.
Well, it's a great blessing to do this. I'm confident if people come out to see the show, they're going to have an unforgettable evening. They're going to be inspired. Their hearts will be lifted. It's a great celebration of sobriety, and it offers solutions to what is now America's number one public health issue and a pandemic globally.
Gary, thank you so much for being with us and for your final thoughts here. We have to move along. Wes, how about you? Do you want to put a bottom line?
We hope to see you Saturday night, and Harris House is very grateful for the opportunity to thank the 12-step community for all the help.
Dan Duncan?
Tickets are still available. They can go to our website, ncada-stl.org, or they can come Saturday night, and there will still be some tickets available at the door.
Okay, we'll put information about all of this on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Once again, I'll remind everyone, pass it on, an evening with Bill W. and Dr. Bob, being presented at Logan University's Purser Theater Saturday at 7 o'clock. Again, more information on our website. Dan Duncan, Wes Tobin, and Greg Kimball, thank you so much for being with
us. Thank you, Don.
Hope you have a great turnout Saturday. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape. He and his guests look at theater dance collaboration to be performed at Webster University's Human Rights Conference on Disability Issues, a Dance St. Louis performance by Common Thread Dance Company in homage to Henrietta Lacks, and the premiere of Barbara Harbach's symphony celebrating the 50th anniversary of UMSL. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the uptick in television production in St. Louis. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. This program is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Camille Phillips, Aaron Dorr, Jeremy Bailey, Kristen Torres, and Spencer Reed. Executive producers Robert Peterson. It's a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.